The next Maspid has been a very, very close Talmid of the Rosh Hashiva, Lo Mosh Yado Mitoch Yado, for many, many a year, every day, speaking with the Rosh Hashiva, involved in managing the yeshiva, both in Ruchnius and Gashmius, Rav Yitzchak Coopersmith.
I want to begin by saying over something the Rosh Hashiva told me many times, privately, in the office upstairs. We all know the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva came back with his 24,000 Talmidim, that he said to his Talmidim, Shali v'shalachem shalahu, that what is mine and what is yours, whatever Torah that we've attained, belongs to her. And he was referring, of course, to his wife, and the Rosh Hashiva was referring, of course, to his Rebbetzin. And he told me, this was not in public, there's no fanfare, if anyone ever doubts what he said it publicly, but he told me in Chedri Chedarim that I never would have been able to accomplish what I did if the Rebbetzin wasn't behind me. And specifically, I would never have started Eshet Torah if it wasn't for the Rebbetzin, and I never would have started Eshet Torah in the Old City, which ended up being a tremendous bracha. He always used to say, I can't believe that after how many years we've been involved in this business, we haven't bring Mashiach, but I also can't believe that Hashem gave us these two buildings facing the Kotel. I believe both things. The second was, I just want to mention before I get into the essence of what I want to say, is that he told me several weeks ago, I went to visit him one Motzi Shabbos, and it was a very bad Shabbos, and I was there, we were talking, he was in a lot of pain, he was very uncomfortable, he'd just come back from the hospital. He said to me, I'm just suffering. But he said that his only relief in this world were his children. He told me the word it says by Yosef when the brothers sold him to the Ishmaelim, that the Torah points out what were they carrying. And Rashi says that typically they would bring neft, things that had a foul odor. But in this time the Torah tells us what they were carrying because they had besamim. He said, my besamim are my children. Reminds me that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is with me in the Tzara. Look what they do for me, the Kivud Avim. And I just want to mention that Yitzchak Chaim Friedman and his Rebbetzin, Rachela, and Yehuda, sorry for mentioning you, the Kivud Avim, they did, of course, by all the children was outstanding, but theirs was over the top. There was nothing like it, day and night, Yom V'Laila, everything he needed. And this was a tremendous source of nachas for him. And as he told me, it's my only nechama, that they were my besamim. I met the Rosh Hashiva 30 years ago, right around the corner from here. My good friend, Ephraim Shore, he's the one who brought me first, took me to the Rosh Hashiva. And I've been with him for 30 years. So 30 years now. And I've had the privilege of working with him, being with him, and want to share with you from my own personal relationship with him many of the things that I thought were so special and unique to the Rosh Hashiva. I told the family on Friday at the Shiva that yesterday on Thursday, seven people died for me. There were seven people. My father, my Rebbe, my Rosh Hashiva, my leader, my partner, and you'll excuse me, my friend, and a person I viewed as a giant, a historical figure. Seven people passed away from me. How do I digest that? What do I do with that? How do you process that? And each one is a different reality. It's a different impact. It's a different missing of him. He was my father. Chazal tell us that the covet for your Rebbe is greater than your Kivud Avim because your father brings you to Olam Hazeh, your Rebbe brings you to Olam Haba. It's greater. As Rav Heiser pointed out, anyone who teaches someone Torah, it's as if he gave birth to him. But the Rosh Hashiva was more. He was more than that. He didn't just teach us Torah. He taught us the very essence of what Torah was. There is a God. He spoke at Sinai. And here's how you have a real and meaningful relationship with us, with him. He created us, literally. He saw these kids that were so confused. They didn't know which end was up. And he taught them Torah, and he uncovered themselves to themselves. He showed them who they really are, what they really believe in, what they really yearn for. He gave us ourselves. He gave us a relationship to reality. He gave us a relationship to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. He was our father. He was a Rebbe. He was a Rebbe. He was a Chacham. He looked at himself, that's my job, I'm a Chacham, I got to think about every aspect of life. I once asked him a question, and it bothered him. It was something about life, it bothered him, and he hadn't thought about it before. He looked at him, that's my job, that's my responsibility. I'm a Chacham, I'm here to understand so I can explain, so I can teach. And he was a Rebbe to all of us. He explained and taught us how to live life in every area of life. To be a father, to be a husband. He taught us through classes. He taught us through his classic shmuzin that he gave from this podium so many times. And he taught us personally, one-on-one, in his office, on the phone. He was a Rebbe. He was a Rosh Hashiva to us. It wasn't just a personal Rebbe that took interest in us and cared for us. But he was a Rosh Hashiva. He had a derech in learning. He understood learning. He had a whole approach in every aspect. He taught us the ultimate covet of Torah in his words. That Torah is almanas lasais. He used to always say, the Almighty is fantastically articulate. He does not waste any words. If it's a part of Torah, it's here to teach us how to live life. That was his pshat in covet of Torah. It's meaningful. It's here to show us how to live, how to grow, how to be greater. He had an approach to Tayag mitzvahs. Organization was very big by him. He learned it from a Sifri, Chumash Shemanim, the Rambam, how to learn a Blat Gemara, Shaklavataria, knowing Shas. He once told me that the 48 ways are 48 different questions on how to learn every sugi in Shas. I mean, who is there in the world that could say such a statement? He had he took the 48 ways and turned it into a way to learn every sugya. I mean, it's unbelievable. He was my leader. He was our leader. He was the engine of Eishet Torah. He was the vision. He saw so clearly what needed to be done, what could be done, what we were capable of. He was giving instructions until the very last day. It was a week ago, about this time, that I went to see him in his apartment. And we were talking about Eishet Torah business, what to do, what about this, what about that. He was the guiding force of Eishet Torah. He was the pillar of Eishet Torah. When we get discouraged, we got depressed, frustrated about our lack of results, which happened commonly, he was always there to tell us that just to have the schus, to fight for Klal Yisrael, that's the greatest schus possible. And that each and every day, we should dance, that the Almighty, as he used to say, gave us dumbbells, this insight that we realize when the world is going down the tubes, when the Jewish people are going through a spiritual holocaust, hey, you should do something about it. He said, for that alone, we should dance. How do you explain it? That we were Zochah to understand that. He was also the anchor. He kept us on track. never let us dumb down the goals. There was always, every time, a desire. Let's make it easier. We'll save some Jews. What's the big deal already? No. That was never enough. We have to save Klal Yisrael. He kept us rooted in our vision and our purpose. He was a partner. I spent every day that he was in Eretz Yisrael with him for at least an hour a day. And it was unbelievable to watch him. You talk about hasmada. People think that his hasmada was only in learning. It's not true. His hasmada was in everything he was doing. Every day he came to the yeshiva to work. How are we going to improve the situation of Klal Yisrael? What are the problems? What are the issues? What can we do about it? What opportunities do we have? How can we seize them? How can we build? How can we do more? He never, ever stopped. Ever. He used to say that Pshat in the Pasuk, V'avta Re'echa Kamocha, he used to ask, why is it called Re'echa? Why are Jews referred to as Reim? And he used to say that it's coming to exclude apikorsim, kofrim, etc. They don't have the din of Re'echa. Because to be a Jew means to share in a common mission, to accomplish the purpose of Kiddush Hashem. And he used to illustrate, he says, if you can imagine landing in 1945, I guess it was, in Normandy on the beaches, and the Nazis are in the bluffs shooting at you, and the guys you get off the boat with, covering for each other, risking their lives for freedom. You may never see that guy, except 40 years later you could bump into him. And the bond is the deepest bond possible. Because when you fight and you're willing to give your life with someone for a meaningful cause, that creates a bond that is everlasting and profound. And he used to say, you guys in Eshet Torah don't get it. You don't realize that underneath it all, that's the bond that all of us had with him and all of us have with each other. We were a band of brothers. And he was also a friend. Of course, I was much younger than him. I'm really only a Talmud, but Chazal say you need a friend. So I was it. I was stuck. It's kind of pragmatic. He wasn't Superman. He wasn't a Malach. He was a real human being. Don't let the Art Scroll book exaggerate it. He was as great as they could be, but he was also very real and very normal and very human. And he had his moments, and he would talk. You have to appreciate that it was the work he did in every area that made him great. He was also a historical figure. Many months ago, I was working with my brother Nehemiah and Ephraim Shore. We're writing a script for a museum, Mirz Hashem, we're going to build next door in the new building to explain to people the meaning of the Jewish people. When we went to the Rosh Yeshiva, we started to work on the script, and Rosh Yeshiva sat down and said, okay, I'm going to explain to you Jewish history. And he took 3,300 years of Jewish history, even more, 4,000 years from Avraham Avinu to today. And he explained it all in a beautiful picture, a beautiful story, that this is the story of a people that started with Avraham Avinu and had a covenant with God to bring Tikkun Olam to the world. And every generation of Jewish history was another chapter of this unfolding story. It was a breathtaking masterpiece. Who understands all of Jewish history, all the events of Jewish history, as a story about the Jewish people and humanity's relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He saw his place as a member of Klal Yisrael as doing whatever he could in this generation to bring about the next step of Jewish destiny. I mentioned in the article I wrote on H.com, I'll be brief, I apologize, that the Rosh Yeshiva was the Gadol HaDor and taking responsibility. He was the Gadol HaDor. There was no one who rivaled him. He took responsibility for the Jewish people, every aspect. There was no problem within the Jewish people that you could ever bring to him and say, no, I don't get involved with that. He may not get involved, but he would never say it wasn't his responsibility. He took responsibility for the entire Jewish people, every aspect of the Jewish people, spiritual issues, physical issues. He took responsibility for the whole world. I mentioned that Rav Chaim Shmulevitz has an essay in Sichos Musar on Achrayus. He says there that the measure of a man is defined by how much responsibility they take. He says, a cheres shot of a katan is an eino bar das. They're on the far side. And the one who takes the most responsibility wears the keser of Malkus. Those are his words. He's the melech. The Rosh Yeshiva was a giant of a man. The Medrash says, I thought about the Rosh Yeshiva, the Moshe Rabbeinu appeared to be 10 feet tall. I always felt the Rosh Yeshiva was 10 feet tall. But it wasn't because of his natural charisma. He was a very thoughtful man, a very introspective man when left to himself. But it was the Keser of Malchus that he wore, the responsibility for the entire world, that made him a giant. He was a giant because he wore the crown of responsibility. Several years ago, in an effort to help the Eshet Torah rabbis be more real with the reality of the spiritual Holocaust, take it more seriously, that it's real. It's real. He invested in bringing about 60 of the Eshet rabbis to Poland. We went to 3 death camps. Treblinka, which they turned into a park. Auschwitz-Birkenau, which was basically a tourist attraction. Then there was Majdanek. Majdanek was the most powerful. They had one barracks that was filled with tens of thousands of shoes. There's no man that could walk into that barracks and not start crying. Because those shoes were the same shoes you buy your kids. Those kids were real. And these were their shoes. Majdanek ends with a 2-ton pit of ash, human remains, Jewish remains. It was devastating. It's devastating. So I figured, okay, I'm going to go ask Rosh Yeshiva, what do you think? What does it say to you? What does it mean? So I walked over to him. I said, Rebbe, what do you say? And he turned at me. And with those eyes like fire, if you've ever seen him that way, he said 3 words to me. We aren't serious. These guys meant business. We're a bunch of schlemiels. Tzvi Sperber, who was our guide, told me that he's taken hundreds of groups to Poland, thousands of people. He never, ever saw anyone react to the Nazis and the Holocaust the way the Rosh Yeshiva did. He took it as a personal affront, a personal challenge to his own commitment to Klal Yisrael. Where am I? Look how serious they were. They planned, they organized, they tried this, they tried that, till they got it more efficient, better, more effective. Where are we? At the beginning of Eshet Torah, Rav Shach Zatzal came to Eshet Torah for a bris of one of the Rosh Yeshiva's children to be the sandik. And Rav Boruch asked him to speak off the cuff, and he said, if one man can kill 6 million Jews, then of course, all the more so, one man can save 6 million Jews. The Rosh Yeshiva lived with that. He knew it was true and would not rest until he got that done. And for every day he didn't get it done, he felt he was not accomplishing his responsibilities, his purpose. He called Eshet Torah Vadat Sala. He didn't like the name Kiruv Organization. It wasn't even politically correct in Eshet Torah. He thought that being a Kiruv Organization sold Eshet Torah short. We have much bigger responsibilities. Kiruv is only one of them. In 1980, he sent myself and 7 or 8 other of the Talmidim here, Ephraim, back to America to work against the re-election of Jimmy Carter. We didn't have money to pay for the plane tickets to get back to Israel. It was ridiculous. I gave out posters. My biggest success is I actually leafleted Rav Moshe Feinstein. And when I put the flyer under the door, he actually opened the door to come out, so I got to meet Rav Moshe Feinstein. I didn't take the flyer. People thought it was crazy. But I'll tell you what I learned from it. I looked at it that if, God forbid, you ever met someone who has a young kid with cancer, they can do some pretty crazy things out of desperation. It's a long shot. It's highly experimental. It costs a lot of money. So what? This is my kid. I got to try everything I can. That's how the Rosh Hashiva looked at Klal Yisrael. Yeah, sure, it's a little desperate. Sure, it's a little crazy. But these are my children. I got to try everything. It was crazy. But he thought it was much crazier to sit by idly. Baruch Hashem used to say, Yesh HaTorah has made a fantastic accomplishment. He said to Yaakov Solomon, when he left America last time, and the situation did not look good when he came back to Israel, that was about 14 months ago. So Yaakov said to him, Reshiva, are you afraid to die? So he said in his typical fashion, he says, nah, I figure I got a pretty good ticket upstairs. Because of Yesh HaTorah. But if you would have asked him, Baruch Hashem, he was happy for every mitzvah that every Jew he ever touched kept. He would always say, we're just getting started. I'm not a success. Not yet anyways. Sure, Baruch Hashem, I'm not going to tell you for all the good that we've been able to do, but I'm not successful yet. This is not what I set out to do. He would always say, Yesh HaTorah is not about saving Jews. Yesh HaTorah is about saving the Jewish people. Keep your eye on the ball. We've got to get the job done. We can't settle for just making an impact. The Rosh Hashiva was a Torah genius. He was brilliant in every way. He had a multifaceted genius. He was fast, faster than anybody. He was deep, deeper than anybody. He was precise. He was psychologically adept, philosophically adept. He was completely down to earth. And he was a visionary. But despite that natural brilliance, he toiled in Torah. He thought about things. He was always reviewing, always learning, always thinking. He told me once that he thought about the pshat in the first paragraph of Shema for 30 years before he figured out what it meant and turned it into his world famous class, The Five Levels of Pleasure, that shown people a completely different understanding of Yiddishkeit, revolutionized the relationship to Yiddishkeit. He created an entire approach that was the basis of Yesh HaTorah that he named Torah Chaim. That Torah, it's not halachas, it's not a rule book, it's instructions for living. It's the Almighty's instruction manual to teach all of humanity how to get the greatest pleasure and fulfillment out of life. And he wrote curriculums, 48 ways, 6 kinds of mitzvahs, his foundations materials. He was like a chemist who would take any material, distill it to its essential parts. That was the concept. And then with an unbelievable imagination, he would articulate these ideas to every Jew in a way that they could not only understand, but truly appreciate. His stories are legendary. They're used by Kiva professional rabbis around the world. It's such a vivid, rich imagination. But although he was completely determined to articulate the relevance of Torah, he never dumbed it down. He never compromised on Torah. He never pandered. He taught a very demanding Torah. Bishvili nivra olam. We're completely responsible for the world. He made it relevant, but he would never water it down. Because he knew if you want serious people, you've got to show them the greatness of Torah and the demands that Torah places on every individual. And in doing so, they will appreciate Torah. I want to finish with, I have more to say, but it's late, so I'm going to cut it short. But to me, what means the most to me was the Rosh Yeshiva's unparalleled Ahavas Yisrael. He really loved everybody. He loved Jews so deeply in such a real way. I remember once we were fundraising in Toronto. It was a long day. After a long day, we were flying back to New York. And we met a young Hasidish couple on the plane who also lived in Borough Park. He stayed in Borough Park when he was in New York. And he asked them, do you have a ride back to Borough Park from the airport? They said, no. He said, okay, I'll take you. We got off the plane, and somehow they got lost. We lost them. He spent a half an hour running around the airport trying to find them. I said, Rebbe, it's late. Let's go. No, let me just give me a few more minutes. Because he couldn't miss out on the opportunity to help another Jew, give him a lift back. He told me, are you kidding? All I got to do is put him in the back of the car, say hello, ask where they want to go, and I'm being like a Kadosh Baruch Hu. How could I turn it down? But that was just the beginning of his Ahavas Yisrael. His real Ahavas Yisrael was the impact he had on all of us. As I mentioned at the beginning, he took literally the mission that says, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem Elokim. He saw that in every Jew. He realized that that's who they were. The people that he built Eish HaTorah with, when they first came to Eish HaTorah, most from people would walk to the other side of the street if they saw them coming down their street. They're scary looking people. He said, don't be superficial. Look, underneath their nose, they got the same indentation. The angel taught them as well. It's there. And that was so intoxicating that he believed in us, that we were going to be his team to change the world for Kvod Shemayim, to make a Kiddush Hashem, to bring about Jewish history, the destiny of mankind. You want me to be with you to do that? You think I can participate? I have what to offer? I mean, what else, what more can you give a human being? How much deeper can you appreciate his understanding of every person and what they were and what they were capable of? It's mind-boggling. He was the most independent person I ever met. He relied on God. He walked with God. And like Avram Avinu, he walked down a very lonely road at times. He was raised in a great Hasidic home. But he always called himself the last of the Misnagdim. He didn't follow in that path. It's true, he was educated in the greatest yeshivas, by some of the greatest Rosh Yeshivas. But he always used to tell us, your job is not to be a Ben Yeshiva, it's to be a Ben Torah. He said, of course, you have to be mevatel das to Gedol Yisrael, but you have to have a das. If you don't have a das, you're a zombie. You got to work it out, have an opinion, and then say, okay, the Gedol disagrees with me, I got to go with him, who am I? But you have to have a das. You don't think. You don't have a derech. You don't have a position. You're not an adult. He had this power of independence because he walked with God. At the end of the trip to Poland, But we're all reeling from the experience. And you can imagine what it would be like going to Poland with Rosh Yeshiva, who didn't miss an opportunity to let us know that we were not yet serious. The last gathering, if you want to see it, you can watch it on the film, Through the Ashes. He said, I know that all of you are broken up by all the pain, all the suffering. Every human being, every child that was murdered by the Nazis. But how many of you are feeling the tsar of the Shekhinah? The pain of the Almighty, that He had to do this to His beloved people. How many of you feel that tsar? That's how really it was with God. We saw people suffering. He thought about the Almighty suffering. The secular world says that nobody's irreplaceable. I don't believe that's Torah. Throughout history, Chazal have told us that there are many people that when they left this world, they were completely irreplaceable. When Rebbe died, another left the world. There's no question that the Rosh Yeshiva, in all the facets that I mentioned, and in many more, he's completely irreplaceable. But he always said, when I'm gone, you guys are going to really come together and you're going to really get the job done. When I'm around, you think, okay, I'm taking the responsibility, you'll help out. When I'm no longer here, then you'll realize it's not just my responsibility, it's all our responsibility. And then you'll realize how much more we can do. The Rosh Yeshiva never stopped working, even to his very last day, as I told you. There's no doubt that now that he's unencumbered by his sick body, he's liberated, that he is the greatest Melech Yosher for the Jewish people, probably that the Jewish people have ever had. But he wouldn't want it that way. He wouldn't want to relieve us of the responsibility. There's no question he's going to be up there and he's going to be working on our behalf. But he's going to leave the responsibility to us in order to not rob us of the opportunity of having the responsibility and the opportunity to take the responsibility to accomplish his mission of bringing Mashiach. And if we do that, and we take that responsibility, I know that he would think that's the greatest gift we can give him, and certainly the greatest gift that we can give our Creator.